argument this morning is Chicago against Comcast Cable Holdings. Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This case, filed in state court, alleged that the defendants had breached their contract with the city to pay a franchise fee on gross receipts from auxiliary services, which the parties agree includes cable modem services. Defendants removed the state breach of contract case, which the district court then held was preempted. This morning, I will explain why removal was improper and why the claim for franchise fees is not preempted by Section 542. First, of course, as to jurisdiction. According to the FCC's declaratory ruling, which we fully accept for purposes of this case, the city has no federal right to a franchise fee on revenue derived from cable modem services because cable modem services are not cable service within the meaning of the fee provision, within the meaning of Section 542.
So, no federal. Backing up, what is it, in your view, that gives the city the right to regulate even cable TV? What is it that gave the city, I know there are the Illinois laws on which you rely, but isn't this a topic that's ultimately under federal law, and is it not federal law that gives the city the right to begin with to charge the franchise fee up to the 5% level on the cable services?
Actually, Your Honor, as we understand federal statute, and as we know state and local law, our authority to impose a franchise fee for the use of the public way derives from state law and only state law. Section 541 of the Cable Act provides that no cable operator may provide cable service without a franchise. But the city's cable ordinance, a franchise ordinance, was adopted before that. It is derived from the city's home rule authority to regulate and derive in a capacity for rent over the use of the public way. The only import of the Cable Act is in Section 542B, which imposes a cap. And we accept the declaratory ruling that cap applies only to cable services, cable modem services, or not cable services, and we do not claim a right under 542, not any aspect, not.
So, of course, 542 is incorporated in the terms of your franchise agreement. Your opponents point that out.
The franchise agreement refers to 542.
So and it will be consistent with 542. The language is something like that.
That's correct. But, of course, Section 542 provides us no right under federal law. That's actually common ground between the parties. Perhaps it's the only thing in common between the parties, is that we have no right to a franchise fee on cable modem services under Section 542 by virtue of the FCC ruling. So the mere reference, actually, it doesn't give us anything, and it has been settled at least in Skelly Oil, and we cite cases from three other circuits in our brief, that the mere reference to federal law, the mere need to decide a question of federal law in a contract case does not create arising under jurisdiction. And, of course,
that's what you're doing. The only question, really, is whether in the phrasing of your declaratory judgment action in the state court, this really was just a regular old breach of contract case for which there's a federal defense, even a very important federal defense, but obviously that falls under the well-pleaded complaint rule, or whether you managed to word your federal claim in such a way to make it look like a state claim, that the question, as your opponents put it, is really whether the city's authorized under 542 to assess these franchise fees. If that's the question, if that was the real declaratory judgment you were asking for, then that's a federal question.
Actually, we would disagree with that, but it is not this case. So let me address both pieces. Even if we had specifically mentioned in the complaint that the reason the defendants had stopped paying the franchise fee was because of the FCC's interpretation of the Section 542. That's still a defense. There's legion of cases establishing that a federal defense does not create removal jurisdiction because the plaintiff's claim does not arise under. We don't have a claim under federal law. There's nothing to plead around here. We don't have one. They haven't identified one. We don't have one. We didn't assert one. And there is no federal law of contracts.
Well, if you're right that there is nothing federal about your initial right to collect a franchise fee, then maybe the rest of this follows. If, in fact, the reason that you can even collect the fee at all is somehow tied up in the federal regulation, it might be a different situation.
If our right, I absolutely agree, Your Honor, we absolutely agree that if our right derived from federal law, and we were asserting that federal right, you know, perhaps we could still be the master of our complaint and decide to forego it, but we don't have one. Federal law, there's nothing in the Cable Act that says the cities must charge a franchise fee. It doesn't even say cable operators must pay. What it says is cable operators may not provide cable service without a franchise agreement, but we could, I assume, agree on whatever terms we wanted in the franchise agreement. The terms of the franchise agreement are dictated solely by state and local law, and our authority to
enter... The federal prohibitions against the city don't count? So if the city, if there were a statute that said the city, you know, cities in the United States or jurisdictional units in the United States are not entitled to charge franchise fees on information services, and the city tried to do that, you don't see that as a federal question?
It absolutely counts, Your Honor, but it's a defense. Not every question of federal law arises.
I understand that, but I'm trying to, believe me, you know, right. I definitely understand that, but if there were a statute that was in a prohibitory form that said cities may not charge these fees, or whatever you want to say, jurisdictional units of some sort, your view is that there's no federal question when the city tries to charge a fee. Because as long as Congress passes laws phrased in prohibitory terms, all these things must be adjudicated in state courts, and when Congress passes affirmative obligations, they get adjudicated in federal court?
My response, Your Honor, is that when the plaintiff's claim depends on an affirmative proposition of federal law, it is removable. And in that situation, it would not depend on an affirmative proposition. There is nothing about our case that would require us to prove that we were not preempted. It's a defense. There are just a ton of those cases. Federal defenses must be litigated in state court. The state courts must hear them. But a federal defense, even a federal defense to a state contract, that's Skelly One. Federal defense
also
to a state.
Louisville and Nashville Railroad against Motley. But in any event, it's been around for a while.
It has. And as I indicated or began a moment ago, that actually has to be right, because otherwise the parties could draft their contracts, their state law contracts, to give them an open door to the federal court. And it is just no wonder that the courts have squarely rejected that approach. The district court's assertion over the state breach of contract action was truly radical, and it should be vacated. If the court did have jurisdiction, its judgment should be reversed. There is a strong presumption against preemption of police power and revenue-raising authority of state and local government. To overcome the presumption requires a clear and manifest intent by Congress. And here, for two reasons, the claim of preemption based on the cap on franchise fees under Section 542 should be rejected because there is no such manifest intent with regard to cable modem services. We start with the language of Section 542B itself, and that section imposes a cap of 5% on a cable operator's gross revenues derived from, and I quote, the operation of a cable system to provide cable services. According to the FCC's ruling, of course, cable modem service is not cable service, and if the cable system is operated for something else, the cap by its own terms does not apply.
Counsel, I have some difficulty with that. Suppose that city says, well, you can't provide cable service without a franchise, and we can't collect more than 5% on your cable service and nothing on anything else. But we won't give you the franchise without an agreement to pay voluntarily, say, 5% on all your other general business activities, AT&T, they're very substantial, but not to exceed twice what you pay on the cable service. In other words, an agreement to pay 10% on the cable service. Do you think that would be lawful under federal law?
It would actually be unlawful under state law, which I know
I
is not
your
question.
State law.
I understand that, but we don't, you know. But it, federal law, the FCC tells us, the Cable Act does not regulate cable modem service. Cable modem service is, as I understand, franchise fee on cable modem service is, at this time, there is no cap.
But that's not the question I'm asking. The question I'm asking is whether an effort to raise revenue from unrelated business activities, and we'll call cable modem service that, or for that matter, it could be AT&T's telephone service or anything else, has to be taken into account against the cap, because otherwise the cap is utterly meaningless with respect to any firm that offers a product in addition to cable service.
Well, these are defined terms, Your Honor, and we do rely on the definitions in the statute. The cable modem is not part of the cable system. The cap applies to use of the cable system.
I just don't see why that matters. In my hypothetical, I'm perfectly willing to concede, right, AT&T, before it was split up and before the cable went to Comcast, is operating, let us say, cable systems and telephone systems. And all the city does is say, in order to provide cable service in Chicago, you have to agree to voluntarily pay a fee measured by your phone business, but not to exceed twice the fee you pay on your cable business.
There's only one cap.
I don't understand why that's functionally different from saying you must pay a 10% fee on your cable revenue.
Well, I have two responses, Your Honor, very, very briefly. The first is, there's no such language like that in 542. And if it is a plausible reading of the statute, even plausible reading, even ambiguity, does not give rise to preemption. In any event, the franchise fee under the city's franchise agreement does not fall within the definition of franchise fee under 542B, doesn't come into the cap for that reason. The fee on cable modem services is not imposed solely because the defendants are cable operators. It's actually imposed solely because they do something that is not cable service, namely provide cable modem service. Again, accepting the FCC's ruling, as we do here, it is not imposed because they provide cable service. I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Solomon. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Robert Scott for the five cable operator defendants that are, or appellees that are consolidated now under the ownership of Comcast Corporation. I want to make two points today, Your Honor. The first would go to the fact that the district court properly removed this, or properly allowed removal of this case because it was within the district court's original jurisdiction. And second, that the city's claim under its complaint cannot stand because it is inconsistent with the letter and intent of Section 542 of the Communications Act. Your Honors, the city's complaint under the well-pleaded complaint rule explicitly requests a declaration under Section 542 of the Communications Act. The sole basis for the complaint is the city's cable television franchise with cable operators, Section 4 of which specifically requires that that the city's rights and obligations under that provision be interpreted and applied in accordance with Section 542.
But of course, the city responds. I mean, there's language in the district court's opinion that I find a little troublesome that makes one think that the district court thinks as long as it's really a big federal question, there's federal question jurisdiction. And that's, of course, not true, because it really depends entirely on how the federal question enters the case, whether it's part of the well-pleaded complaint or whether as a defense.
Correct, Your Honor.
So that much is troublesome. And then the question is, what's the city really saying? Is the city asking, we want to collect money under these contracts and nothing stands in our way? That's essentially a contract action, and it's up to you to say, well, actually something does stand in the city's way, namely 542. Or you know, how do you affirmatively make this case to city's request about 542?
I mean, I think a big distinction with the city's complaint and many of the cases in which removal has been remanded to state court is that Section 542, contrary to the city's position, explicitly authorizes the city to collect the franchise fee. Section 542A states that any cable operator may be required
under... It doesn't authorize the city to collect this franchise fee. That is, it would be perfectly lawful, you agree, for the city to collect a 4% fee. In fact, in your view, it would be highly desirable for the city to collect a 4% fee. Indeed, it would be highly even better if the city collected a 1% fee or none at all. There's nothing in the cable statute that authorizes the city to collect 5% if you have a contract or a local ordinance of 3%, right? You agree with that?
The city could, in a contract, have agreed to a lower
ordinance, right?
Correct.
So it can't be the cable statute that is authorizing the collection of this fee, because if there were such a contract or local ordinance, it would be crystal clear that the city couldn't collect more than 3% in my hypothetical.
Well, I think that they couldn't if
therefore
their local ordinance...
Therefore, it has to rest on the local ordinance and contract, right?
Well, the case presents, Your Honor, a very close interaction between state and federal law, which is what I think makes it a difficult case, I think.
Well, that's why I asked the question to Ms. Solomon. The original authority of the city to collect this fee, I think, is what this whole case turns on. Because if that authority flows, as I said to her, from state law ultimately, or, you know, include in that home rule measures that apply to Chicago, et cetera, then that's what originally lets the city regulate these rights of ways. It's not as though the city's trying to issue licenses for cellular telephones or something. I mean, there are plenty of things that are absolutely under federal authority, and the city really has no role to do, although sometimes there's cooperative federalism and the like. But cable TV, as I understand it, isn't like that. I mean, the city and other localities around the country lease rights of way, and people construct cables, and it's a sort of a physical infrastructure that's out there.
Well, the legislative history to the 1984 Cable Act, which was enacted Title VI dealing with cable communications, makes quite clear that before that act, there was something of a Wild West in the local and cable relations where franchises were bid up. 36% is referenced in that legislative history is what one city required and what one cable operator asked for. And Congress stepped in to say, no, we're going to, in that legislative history, both authorize cities to collect franchise fees and limit that fee, as a matter not only of protecting cable operators, but of protecting consumers where the ultimate rate pressure rests. And that's clear in the legislative history that Congress wanted to have a federal level of oversight of this issue rather than allowing it to be, as Your Honor's hypothetical is, strictly a matter of state law where the cities can negotiate whatever they want.
But under your view then, the city wouldn't even have the right to collect a 3% fee without the existence of this statute, that this statute is necessary for the city to collect a penny.
Well, I think the statute makes it clear that it authorizes that as a matter of federal law. I think before the law, there were some places where there was some doubt. I don't know.
Well, why does this, I mean, I guess you need to answer the question then, why do you think the statute speaks to the city's, any city's right to collect fees below the 5% cap? As you rightly said, there's a cap, and Congress has certainly spoken in this area, and we all know about defense preemption. I mean, there could well be some form of defense preemption here. But you think that any city in the absence of this statute that tried to collect, you know, a 1% fee would be behaving in an unlawful manner?
I think in the absence of the statute, there is no federal question. Does that answer the question, Your Honor?
Well, what I'm trying to figure out is under what theory you think the city's right to collect the 5% or lower fees comes from federal law. And you're essentially saying that Congress occupied the field, I think, when it passed this statute. I'm not sure anybody else has said that.
I think as in some of the ERISA cases and the Labor Management Relation Act cases, that the statute does, in fact, occupy certain issues, not all of them. I think this Court has made a number of opinions where it recognizes that the complete preemption concept is a misnomer and that what we're speaking of is actually Congress filling up an area of a subject. So as in ERISA, not all cases that relate to ERISA are actually federal questions. Many of them have been found to and some have been found not to. And in this case, the city's complaint rests on a franchise agreement which says we have to interpret and imply our rights and obligations under Section 542, which in turn says that the cable operator may be required, which is passive language for saying the city may require a cable operator in its cable franchises to pay this fee. And then Section 542B kicks in to establish the limit on that fee. I think the answer comes from the text of the statute, and the reason it does is quite clear, I think, in the legislative history of Section 542.
On your view, are arbitration contracts covered by the Federal Arbitration Act claims arising under federal law? Federal Arbitration Act says anybody engaged in interstate commerce may contract for arbitration. All state law about arbitration adverse to this is hereby overridden. It's a permission to contract and an override of state limits. Is that a claim under federal law, right? Somebody makes an arbitration contract.
Your Honor,
Comcast, for example, is the scope and so on of that contract now to be litigated in federal court?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that act, but if it is, as you say, an act which completely displaces all of the claims and maybe defenses.
It wipes out any state defenses and it creates a federal right to contract.
Well, it sounds like it would be a federal question, Your Honor. It sounds like that would fall within.
It seems to me under your rationale it certainly would be.
But in fact, it isn't.
To know
yeah.
that it is extremely well established that it is not, mm-hmm. however, a federal mm-hmm. question, and that such things come to federal court only when supported by the diversity jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. And is that in the statute, Your Honor? I wouldn't know. I'm afraid
There's a huge body of case law
about it. And it seems to me that the line of argument you're making is a ground well trod on that subject.
Well, I think the argument I'm making, Your Honor, comes right from Berta versus Ecker, this court's decision, which we cite in our brief. In which the city carefully pled here around the basis of its federal question in order to try and couch this as a state court claim. The city pled.
Why do you say that? I mean, but the city wants the money. I mean, let's be clear about this. It would like to be able to collect this money, and it may be that somebody will adjudicate someday that the federal statute doesn't let it do so. But they want to collect the money, and you want to say, you can't see Section 542. A well-known pattern. I mean, in Voorhees against Napier Air Club, it was another area where there's a huge federal interest in the skies, if you will, in aviation, yet we held this was defense preemption, not the kind of thing that gives rise to a federal claim.
I mean, I think the difference here is, Your Honor, they've pled that we were paying before a certain date. They pled that we stopped paying the fees on the service after that date. They pled that the parties informed each other of their legal positions and that they disagreed.
Right.
And they failed to plead why the operator stopped paying, which I think is...
So why did they care? They don't really care if you were in a bad mood that day. I mean, they want the money, right?
No, I think it all goes back to the fact that their claim arises under this contract, which requires it be interpreted and applied in accordance with Section 542, and that if you look at that law, it squarely requires the resolution of a substantial element of federal law as a matter of their complaint. There is a federal ingredient in their claim that they've artfully avoided pleading in their complaint, and I think that they cannot have a resolution of this case without that issue being resolved. It is quite
sure they could. All that has to happen is that you have to fail to plead a federal defense to their claim. All right? They say we're entitled to this under state and local law. All right? And if you, at that point, neglect to plead a federal defense, this case will be entirely resolved under state and local law.
Well, I don't agree, Your Honor. If we look at the complaint, which incorporates the franchise, and if the court looks at Section 4, which is the basis of their complaint, that we need to They want to recover under Section 4. The judge would have to look at that complaint and say, let's see, what does Section 4 require? It requires that you interpret this in accordance with our ordinance. Go to the ordinance, which says that the franchise fees provisions must be interpreted and applied in accordance with Section 542. The court would have squarely before it the question of federal law that we're saying is raised by their complaint.
Suppose the state of Illinois passes a law saying it's unlawful to make any combination contract or conspiracy in restraint of trade. That's Section 1. Section 2, in interpreting Section 1, the state court shall apply the same principles that the Supreme Court of the United States applies to the Sherman Act. And we now have a claim based on Section 1. Is it a claim under federal law?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think there's a case of that effect, in fact.
Indeed. It's very well established that a state law or contract or something like that incorporating federal law, incorporating federal principles, is still a claim under state law. Well, here we have the same kind of thing. Contract may be said to point to federal principles. But why does that make it a claim under federal law?
I think the key distinction, again, is subsection 542A of the Communications Act, which authorizes the city to collect this fee. It is not, that fact is not found, Your Honor, in any of the ERISA cases that have been remanded. It's not found in the RICO cases that this court has rejected. This is a case where the federal
statute... You have to be saying this is a case where Congress took two steps, in fact. They erased the right of the cities on their own to collect fees, and then they created a new legal regime under which the cities, by in a sense delegated federal power, could charge fees up to 5%. And I guess it's the first step that
I think, Your Honor, that
hard to see.
But when Congress enacted the statute, it was erasing the ability of any city to charge whatever it wants to require that we...
Well, you have to say it's erasing the ability of the city to charge anything, because then whatever they charge, whether it's 1%, 3%, 5%, is all done by virtue of federal authority, mm-hmm. just as it would be in a cellular telephone system.
Well, the word erase is not to be found anywhere, so as a shorthand way of saying that Congress took this and made it a federal issue, I have to agree. That's exactly what the statute did. And if you read the legislative history, it makes it clear that this was an issue of national importance where Congress said cities and cable operators are agreeing to whatever they want in terms of what these payments are, and we don't approve. We want to step in and make a statute that not only confirms that these fees can be collected by cities, but shows how they can go about doing it and what they can and cannot collect. And I think that is quite clear from the legislative history. It is a different statute than has been considered. This is an issue of first impression. And I think the federal interests that are presented in that legislative history in the statute are fulfill the substantial federal question element, where substantial doesn't mean a big question. It means a necessary element of what the plaintiff must prove to recover on its complaint. With that, Your Honor, since there's no further questions, we haven't touched on the merits at all, but I think that's an open and shut question. I think that the city's claim is resolved in every respect under the statutory language, which says that what they're trying to collect is a fee for the operation of a cable system. That's in the franchise. That's in the ordinance. That's in the complaint. Section 542 governs what you can collect for the fees from the operation.
This is such an open and shut case. Why are you fighting so hard over which forum will determine it?
Your Honor, the issue is right. We're going to fight hard. This is a big issue. We think that this is a question that we would prefer to have resolved in a federal court. States obviously have concurrent jurisdiction over many federal questions.
Mm-hmm.
My time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Solomon?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to go back to one point. Mr. Scott refers to alleged abuses, before the Cable Act was enacted, and Judge Easterbrook posed to me a hypothetical suggesting likely abuses after the Cable Act. I just want to make sure that I fully address that. If there are abuses now, it may be the basis for further federal regulation. The FCC's declaratory ruling requests comment on a billion issues, including the role of state and local governments in the franchising process. And if local governments are abusing authority under this statute or any other federal statute, the cable companies certainly have their advocates to rein us in on that. Our point is simply that this statute did not preempt the city's ability to obtain a franchise fee on cable modem service when the statute expressly preserves the ability of local governments to require a franchise. The statute says the preemption under the statute is only conflict preemption, Section 556. It does not occupy the field. It preempts only to the extent that it's inconsistent and where there's a presumption against preemption, except by the clear and manifest intent of Congress. FCC tells us cable service does not include cable modem service. The cap, therefore, does not apply. We would ask the district court's judgment be vacated or, in the alternative, reversed. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.